Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 88 of our Sounds Atlantic podcast. We are off to Montreal today to speak with a singer-songwriter who hails originally from Cape Breton, Nova Scotia, but who has recently made Montreal his home. I'm a little behind the times here in catching up with this really engaging young artist, as he's been already touring around these past few years, and he's played at the National Arts Center and at Blues Fest here in the nation's capital, and at the Folk Fest sur le Canal à Montréal in Vancouver, at the Island Music Fest, and at Rockwood Music Hall, just to name a few of the stops he's been making to display his many talents. And what I've now observed is a man who has taken a lot of time to think about what he puts to paper and the way he translates it into lyrics and melodies that will capture your attention as they have mine. I'm your host, Ron Moores, and I'm delighted to introduce Mike McKenna Jr. to this Sounds Atlantic podcast. I'll be back with Mike in a finger snap to showcase his new release, which is At the Edge of the World. And we'll talk about his debut release as well, titled a few years ago. It came out titled Pacific Northwest. So don't go anywhere, folks. I'll be back in a finger snap. Now, just before we get going here, I must apologize for some of the aberrant noise you've been hearing on the last couple of shows. They were, I think, due to instances of poor communication and poor connections, or poor lines. We've now rectified that, and in part, it's been solved with a new mastering system developed by this podcast's carrier, who is Buzzsprout. They do a really superb job here, I think. So this next show, and I'm sure the ones following that, will be very audio friendly. Now, I must say that I found Mike's story about how he came to songwriting and recording rather unusual in comparison to most stories with which I'm familiar, and then how this led him to a completely new journey of discovery that I will let him tell you about before we jump into his music. So joining me now from his home in downtown Montreal is a singer-songwriter who grew up in Cape Breton, Nova Scotia, journeyed off on a voyage of discovery to Australia, you might say, and then found home in multicultural Montreal. He is my featured guest today, and he is Mike McKenna Jr. Mike McKenna, it's great to be talking to you for the first time, and you're living in Montreal.
Yeah, I live in La Petite Patrie. It's been almost 10 years now since I moved here.
Really?
Which is kind of crazy to say it that way.
Yeah. Well, I had no idea you were there that long.
Me neither. Oui, je parle français.
How about that? How is it like living in Montreal? I mean, you're a Cape Bretoner.
You know what? We find each other here very quickly. So, you know, I have my Cape Breton community, my Nova Scotia Maritimes community here, but, you know, I do love living in Montreal for the things that make Montreal unique in the French culture. And, you know, yeah, a lot of my Francophone friends here in Montreal definitely uplift my life and bring something new to it. So, yeah, I live here for all the things that that made my eyes light up about Quebec when I was a little kid and when we would first come here in my French immersion program and junior high and high school. You know, we would go to Quebec City, but that really drew me into Quebec. I knew it was something different than the rest of Canada.
How about that?
And I guess I didn't really realize that I would end up here until a lot later.
Wow. So you kind of have, if you've been there 10 years, you really settled into my former hometown.
I did, yeah. And I still go back to Cape Breton quite often, you know, maybe several times a year. But I kind of found myself setting up shop here. After university, I graduated university in 2009, and I moved to Australia for a year. And that's kind of where I started writing my first song.
My goodness.
I worked at a music festival as a bartender. I was just opening cans and taking tickets, but I got to see some incredible artists in that time.
You mean, really, Mike, you had not written until you went to Australia? Is that right?
That's right, yeah. Oh. Yeah, I wrote my first songs around that time, 2010.
What motivated you to do that?
Honestly, I was looking for a job and I couldn't find one. It was the very beginning of when I arrived there, and I had a few friends that said, "Oh, we could probably help you get something," and it kind of just didn't pan out. And when I arrived, I wanted to start working right away. I was doing a working holiday visa, so I wanted to backpack and surf and travel around and travel in New Zealand and do all the things that people do, and, you know, when they're young and they move to Australia for no reason.
Wow.
So I guess I quickly realized that the old school pounding the pavement with your resume printed out in a manila envelope wasn't exactly the way they did things there. Huh. You know, all the applications were online, it turns out. And I didn't really have Wi-Fi in my apartment when I first arrived. It took me a few weeks to get it. So I was like going and trying to do things on Wi-Fi and during the day in like public Wi-Fi places, going to restaurants to use their Wi-Fi to fill out job applications. So my first while there was a lot of time spent in my apartment for the first few weeks. And that's when I kind of just was sitting around. I don't know where we got a guitar. It might've been my roommate's guitar, but there was one laying around the living room. And that's kind of when I started. I think I just kind of picked up a few, like a little chord progression that I really liked, that it was a traditional, and it didn't really have words to it. And I guess a song just kind of flowed out. It was the first time I'd ever really kind of looked at that and realized that I could make something of my own.
And how old were you then, Mike?
I was 24 at that time. So I turned 25 in Australia.
Wow.
So, and you had not written a song until you hit Australia. That's fascinating.
I had not written a song. I remember my friend's family that hosted me when I first arrived for a couple of weeks. I remember I was sitting outside at night one time, and my friend's sister made us some coffees, and we were kind of just, they had a guitar and she'd asked me to play, and, you know, 'cause she knew I played guitar, but she didn't know that I didn't have my own repertoire. You know, I guess when I sat down and I started playing a few covers of, you know, whoever, John Mayer, Dave Matthews and Ben Harper and the people I listened to at that time, she listened to it. She's like, "Oh, that's really nice. What do you play of your own?" You know? And I kind of stopped and I was like, "You know, I don't play anything of my own."
What were you writing about when you first started writing in Australia?
I think that moment where she put me on the spot and I realized I didn't have my own repertoire, who kind of caught me off guard, you know? And those first two or three songs that I wrote in that apartment were mostly about home. You know, it was mostly a nostalgic kind of feeling that came out in the first few songs.
Mm-hmm.
I released the first EP that I released, which were basically these songs, not necessarily from that time in Australia, but when I moved back to Canada the next year, I started writing a lot when I landed here in Montreal, because this is where I decided to set up.
Hmm.
And my first EP, Traveling Man, came out. I did two releases of it. I did a 4-track release and a 6-track. So those first 4 tracks I wrote here. And they were also along the same lines. A lot of stuff about nostalgia for Cape Breton and stuff about my family. I wrote a song called Die in the West. I wrote that here in Montreal when I got back.
Oh,
and that
really?
was a song about someone from Cape Breton moving to Alberta to work on the oil rigs, and kind of that push and pull as to whether or not they wanted to move back home or stay out there or send money home, or, you know, and that kind of, that was the reality for a lot of my friends when I graduated high school. I was one of the few people that didn't go make that move to Fort McMurray and kind of get into that, the cycle of the 2 weeks on, 1 week off. So I wrote a song about it. And that kind of, you know, Die in the West became kind of the song that I guess I based the rest of the album off of. So that's my first EP and a lot of my first songs.
Well, let me stop you just here and let everybody have a listen to Die in the West, and we'll come right back.
Sounds good.
Well, I keep coming home just to see you, my dear. My parents are old and the time's coming near. Well, my pockets are rich, my back's getting poor, yeah. You know I keep my chin high, my feet on the floor. Well, it must have been some time since I last seen you. since you waved me goodbye from your living room. Oh, the company just paid my flight to come home, yeah. You know a week off ain't much when you travel alone. And I said, I know that our love can just never be as long as I need Fort McMurray. Love, you know how much I miss the sea and the breeze on the Myra River. Oh, the nights in Whale Cove were the best, yeah. As long as there's work on the oil rigs, my lover, I'll leave you my heart, but I'll die in the West. Even out on the rigs, I found maritime charm, yeah. As I worked at the side of my brothers in arms, had the lads from the Rock and the mainlanders too, yeah. So when you're this far from home, you connect by your roots. You see, my grandfather spent half his life underground, yeah. His lungs were so black that he may as well drown. And now I don't wish for my children to see, no, their old man to look 50 when he's 33. And I said, I know that our love can just never be as long as I need Fort McMurray. Love, you know how much I miss the sea and the breeze on the Myra River. Oh, the nights spent with you were the best, yeah. As long as there's work on the oil rigs, my lover, I'll leave you my heart, but I'll die in the West. So I raise up my glass and I offer a toast to our last visit before I go back, yeah. Just to bank up my money while the oil sands last. No, you must tell my son where he'll bury me, in the soil of Cape Breton I'd much rather be. And I hope I can save enough money to rest, yeah. When the time comes across my arms over my chest. And I said, I know our love can just never be as long as I need Fort McMurray. Love, you know how much I miss the sea, the breeze on the Myra River. Oh, the nights in Whale Cove were the best, yeah. As long as there's work on the oil rigs, my lover, I'll leave you my heart, but I'll die in the West. And I said, I know, oh, that our love can just never long as I need Fort McMurray. Love, you know how much I miss the sea and the breeze on the Myra River. Oh, the nights spent with you were the best, yeah. As long as there's work on the oil rigs, my lover, I'll leave give you my heart, but I'll die in the West.
G'day, g'day, everybody. This is April Virch. I want to thank you for joining my friend Ron Moores and listening to Sounds Atlantic. Stay tuned for the finest roots and acoustic music from Atlantic Canada.
Stretch around my way. Tune the fiddles up. Let's hear the guitars play.
That's Die in the West, everybody. It's from Mike McKenna's pen. Now, how do you get then from, or how did you get from Die in the West to the full-blown, your full-blown debut album, Out to the West, the Pacific Northwest bound album? Tell us about that.
I guess when I recorded Traveling Man, it was really trying to put my best songs forward and create a demo, really. And I had recorded a lot of my first songs and put them on SoundCloud, and that was my first medium. SoundCloud was the first thing that really introduced me to a lot of artists and other songwriters here in Montreal. I actually had an artist in Australia named Jordan Rakai. And so he's a neo-soul artist that his career started to really take off and do really well. He gave me advice over SoundCloud on how to get in the studio and make a demo, because I really liked his first EP. And I kind of asked him what his budget was and how he went about doing it. So I kind of took that info and recorded in a studio here called Serotone in Montreal. And I did it out of my own, out of my own pocket. I ended up actually moving to China the following year to pay it off. I worked as an English teacher for a year.
In China?
In China, yeah, in 2015. So I recorded Traveling Man. I just put, every penny I had at that time into it and borrowed money. And then I realized, now I had my first record, I guess, a very strong studio quality demo, you could say. But then I owed money on it. So I worked in China and I played music on the weekends at a hostel there and kind of, took those songs to the stage in front of a Chinese audience before I brought them back here.
How did that go?
To practice. It was always interesting, like people really liked, I guess, the idea of me there playing in front of them. But it was harder to connect to the audience with a language barrier. I can't say that my Chinese was strong enough to chat really well in between songs. I had very much survival Mandarin. So I guess it was kind of a breath of fresh air when I landed back in Canada. It was my first time in Vancouver when I was on my way back from living in China. I stopped and played at Mark Emery's Cannabis Culture Lounge in Vancouver. I felt like it was the opposite feeling. So I got in there and the place was fully ablaze, trust me. And so the audience was very receptive and very relaxed. And I was like, oh, okay, this is fun. I think a lot of people would always have their phones out.
How do you get I'm playing in front of a Chinese crowd to, let's say, Pacific Northwest bound?
Yeah, so I guess Pacific Northwest bound is the only track on that album that I wrote while I was in China.
Oh, what do you
mean? Yeah, so that was kind of, I guess my year in China was probably the transition between those two albums. That was the first song that I wrote from the record. And then when I moved back, I was spending a lot of time in Toronto. I was working with a management team based in Toronto. And so I did some writing there as well at a really beautiful old house, my old manager's house. And this place, I probably wrote another three or four of the songs. And then I wrote the rest of the album at a little place in St. Henry, actually, one of my friend's apartments. So I kind of split it between Toronto and Montreal, that record. And then I was gathering and collecting old Nova Scotia traditional songs back in Halifax. That was kind of the other element of Pacific Northwest Bound that I wanted to be a little bit different than Traveling Man.
Do you know Jim? Did you know the late Jim Dorey?
No, I didn't.
You would know Dave Gunning.
Okay.
Do you know Dave Gunning, I guess?
Oh, I know Dave? Yeah, I know Dave Gunning. I played a festival with Dave and JP last spring.
Yeah, okay. I'm asking you.
He would know Dave Gunning, yeah.
The reason I'm asking you is because both of those fellows have written about the subject matter in Pacific Northwest Bound, and and your Fort McMurray song as well. It's one of the characteristics of living in the East and looking for work and having to go out West, I guess.
Why don't you speak to us? It's a very real reality.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Well, all right. Let's listen to the title track from your debut album. We'll come right back and do some more.
She's my darling, Pacific Northwest bound. She lives inside my mind. She's the one that tried to drown me, and I struggle to get my head above the waves. My darling pulled me under. She pulled me under once again. I raise the topsail, Pacific Northwest bound. I'm on the brink again. Bottles all around me, cannons blazing, wind whips against my face. My lover pulled me under. She pulled me under once again. Oh, 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 there's something so beautiful.
Oh.
Oh, 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 there's something so beautiful. You're lying next to me. Copper sunrise, Pacific Northwest bound, I'm headed home again. Beneath the redwood crown with totems waving, eagles guide me in. My darling pulled me under,
she pulled me under once again.
Oh, 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 there's something so beautiful.
Oh.
When you're lying next to me.
Right, that's Pacific Northwest Bound. Everybody comes from Mike McKenna's debut album. We're talking about this and more. Little Things. I like the sound of that. But speak to us about Little Things. How did that come about?
Little Things was kind of my first reflection on, my distance of living in Montreal and my home in the Maritimes. You know, my grandmother, my mom's mother from Glace Bay in Cape Breton, she was a really sweet old classic grandmother, the tea on the stove type. And at one point in her life, her mind was starting to fail. She ended up with dementia and Alzheimer's. And so at that time, we were kind of slowly noticing that these changes were happening. I kind of expected at some point that I would get a call from my mom saying that I had to go home. So this song kind of came out during that drive itself. Was a very long, I mean, it's long anyway. The drive from Montreal to Cape Breton is 16 hours.
Yeah, it's long.
To where I live in Cape Breton. So that was, it's much longer when you're going home to visit somebody who's about to pass away.
Where was your hometown in Cape Breton?
Well, I was born in Glace Bay.
Okay.
But that's where my grandparents lived, and where my mom was a physiotherapist, and she had a clinic in Glace Bay when I was growing up. We lived in Myra, on the Myra River. When I was about six and on.
Mm-hmm. I was just a boy, my grandmother said to me, dear, when I'm old and I lose my mind, you need to take care of me. Before she passed on, well, I was given one more day. Heard her voice again in my head, and my thoughts drifted on away. I feel it's been forever since had the pleasure of driving. This point in my life, I miss the little things. Sometimes being alone, it's good for the soul. More time in my mind, yeah. More time as I'm growing old. And someday, well, I'll meet you there, yeah. Someday I'll meet you there, yeah, yeah, oh. Someday I'll meet you there, yeah. Whoa, 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 whoa. I can see so clearly my first memory. I'm on your lap in a rocking chair, cutting pears while we watch TV. And you always watched over me, oh, like I knew you would. And you barely recognized my face, it's a part I never understood. And someday I'll meet you there, yeah. Or someday I'll meet you there, yeah, yeah, oh. And someday, well, I'll meet you there, yeah, yeah. Mm. Whoa, 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 whoa. Well, someday, someday, someday I'll meet you there, yeah. Oh, someday. Yeah, well, someday, someday, someday I'll meet you there, yeah. Oh, someday. Oh, oh.
We built those boats down at the shipyard for 40 years or more.
Hey, this is Dave Gunning, and you're listening to Sounds Atlantic with my good buddy Ron Moores.
As I watch the night fall across a tired floor, far too old for working anymore.
All right, everybody, that's Little Things. That's Mike McKenna. And if I can, Mike, I'd just like to have you talk about one more off the debut album, and then we'll move on to your current album. I'm sure everybody's anxious to hear songs from your brand new album. But if you would, speak to us about Fare Thee Well.
Oh, see, that wouldn't be on that record, but it is on my YouTube. So there's a YouTube video of a cover that we did.
That's where I found it. That's
yeah, so that... Fare Thee Well was a song collected by the Lomax brothers, I believe. And it was kind of something that I was on a Helen Creighton drive at that point, where I was trying to find some old Nova Scotia folk songs. But I also, you know, my dad's American, and I've always appreciated American folk music, and I kind of wanted to have a song in my repertoire that represented that. And I always found this to be a really beautiful one. I mean, Bob Dylan's covered it. There's been lots of modern artists that have done it. Especially there was a movie that came out recently called Inside Llewyn Davis. And I believe it was Oscar Isaac did a cover of this with Marcus Mumford from Mumford and Sons. And that was probably the first time that I heard it. So that was just a beautiful little song about a woman that lost her,
her lover, and she was recorded down by the river singing this while she washed clothes. And so I guess there's something moving in that imagery to me that sometimes makes a song, you know, really stand out and makes me really want to play it. So that's really the background behind Fare Thee Well. Dink, they call it Dink's song because Dink would have been the woman that was singing it. But I think Fare Thee Well is probably the more common title for it. You know, we had a song by the Rankins. I don't know if you know Fare Thee Well by the Rankins.
Absolutely.
But that was one that, you know, growing up, was, you know, myself and my sisters really knew the song. We loved that song. So I think that was almost the obvious one. It seemed the obvious thing for me to sing the Cape Breton one. And I kind of heard this American one that had the same title, that, ooh, this has a different melody and different lyrics to it. I kind of want to grab onto this one.
As we're recording on both, you're ready to go.
If I had wings like Noah's dove, I'd fly the river to the one I love. To fare thee well, my honey, fare thee well. I knew a man, he was long and tall, and he moved his body like a cannonball. So fare thee well, my honey, fare thee well. I remember one evening in the pouring rain, you filled my heart with an aching pain. So fare thee well, my honey, fare thee well. Muddy river runs muddy and wild, but I ain't give a bloody my unborn child. So fare thee well, my honey, fare thee well. Just as shores birds fly high above, life ain't worth living without the one you love. Fare thee well, my honey, fare thee well. So fare thee well, my honey, fare thee well.
That's Fare Thee Well, everybody, and you just heard Mike describe how that came about, and with that, we'll leap into Mike's brand new album and The Edge of the Earth here. I'd like to start off with a song that that I think is one of your favorites on the album, "Pale White Moon." If you'd speak to us about that,
sure. "Pale White Moon" is one of the more recently written songs on the record. I wrote it last summer. And it was one that I really set out to write. I say that in a way that, you know, sometimes you sit down just to write a song and it can be anything and you kind of just try to pour an idea out. And sometimes you sit down with a set idea and you want that to become a song. And so this is about a story of a young folk singer from Toronto that passed away in Cape Breton in 2009 while I was living there. And she was hiking up in the mountains in Cape Breton Highlands National Park, and she was attacked by coyotes. So there was something about that story that really stood out to me, and it really became kind of I felt like this, to do justice to her story, that a song would be appropriate. She was a folk singer herself. She was supposed to play a show even in Sydney, in my hometown, that night. So it's a delicate subject matter. you know, it's not easy to write a song about somebody who passed away in a really unfortunate way. And knowing that people that knew her or her family, they might hear this song. So, you know, that's a more challenging task for me. Rather than writing about myself, you know, it's easy to pour your own feelings out. Oh, this happened to me and this breakup and whatever. But I really wanted to do this one justice, and I went to my family friend's cabin in Troy. So Troy's, you know, just when you come across the Cancel Causeway into Cape Breton. If you go north along the coast, you know, Troy's one of the first little communities that you hit. So my parents' friends from the Kaizik family have a vineyard there. They have a beautiful home, and they let me stay there for a few nights in the summertime to do some writing. And I probably put 2 or 3 days of rewriting the song in before it came out. But it was kind of my tribute to Taylor Mitchell and her legacy that she left behind. I've noticed that a lot of people in the folk community knew this girl, you know, as I made a lot more friends and attended more folk conferences. Especially people from Toronto. She was pretty well known, and I think her mother attends a lot of these conferences and goes to these events and stuff. So Pale White Moon is definitely one that we took our time with on the record itself to make sure that it had, you know, it landed in a certain way. You know, I didn't want to necessarily put that up front and make it track one, track two, a single or anything, you know. I kind of felt it would be more appropriate to have it maybe track four.
Here's Pale White Moon, everybody.
She just wanted to walk in the highlands. It's the prettiest side in the island. Maybe it's true, they say. The summit feels like you're flying. She didn't tell no one she was going. Late October was hard and snowing. Orange leaves, they say, roll right down to the ocean. You know I didn't understand, but I sure do now. Just trying to get away from it all somehow. And when you look up in the sky at the pale white moon, oh, I didn't understand until I went there too. Over her shoulder she heard it. Yellow eyes on the path made her nervous. And they followed her. I know that she didn't deserve it. She just wanted to hike in the mountains. She just wanted to feel her surroundings. What a sin, they say. She was still alive when they found her. No, I didn't understand, but I sure do now. Just trying to get away from it all somehow. And if you look up in the sky at the pale white moon, oh, I didn't understand until I went there too. No, I didn't understand, but I sure do now. Trying to get away from it all somehow. When you look up in the sky at the pale white moon, oh, I didn't understand until I went there too. Oh, I didn't understand until I went there too.
Hey folks, it's J.P. Cormier here, and you're listening to my old buddy Ron Moore on Sounds Atlantic.
All right, that's Pale White Moon comes from At the Edge of the World. Speaking about at the Edge of the World, my recollection of the Swiss Air flight was probably one of the most devastating flights, I think, that there has been. Certainly one of the most, anyway. It was a terrible tragedy. The plane, as I understand it, had electronic problems, and that caused the electronic systems to fail, and the flight went down just close to Peggy's Cove in St. Mary's Bay, killing everybody on board. And I gather this in some way inspired you to write has become the title track. You want to speak to us about that, The Edge of the World?
Yeah, that's a pretty accurate description of the Swiss Air tragedy. You know, it was something that, you know, in the news, obviously we see the people that perish in the event itself. And we see the damaged plane and the lighthouse and that type of imagery. But really the idea of that song came from something different, and it was many years later. It wasn't necessarily the impact it had on me as a kid as much as I read a newspaper article. I love how I still call it a newspaper article, even though I totally read it online. I read a CBC article of this man from Cape Breton. He might have even been from Newfoundland, but lived in Cape Breton at the time. And he was part of the rescue crew that was sent out as emergency services to recover some of the bodies from this event. And he was talking about PTSD that he was suffering from, mm-hmm. and how he was treating it and how he was coping. And I guess this particular story wasn't the first time that I heard it, you know, in so far as being the reality of something that happens in Nova Scotia more often than we think it does. You know, the recovering of the bodies floating in the water. Only a few years earlier, when I was researching songs for Pacific Northwest Bound, I was in the public archives in Halifax, and you can read some of these. It's at Dalhousie University, and you can read all kinds of stuff about Nova Scotia history, and they have records from the Halifax explosion and from the Titanic and all this stuff. And so when I first went in on the first level, they have under glass all of these logbooks from the fishermen that would have recovered bodies from the Titanic. And I'd read these logbooks, and they were very dry. You know, they were military style logbooks. So it's very much just like the temperature of the weather, you know, or what time that they woke up, like very simple things. Oh, recovered this many bodies. It was very, very dry. And so when I read it the first time, it didn't hit me as much as when I was now seeing, you know, the 2020 version of it. I was now seeing somebody who's a lot more willing to talk about how it affected them rather than just what they did. And I think that was the differentiation. That's when it sparked something in me that, you know, there was a story behind this that probably isn't being told very often. You know, when I was 13 years old, I was an air cadet. I was a Royal Canadian Air Cadet. And I was really interested in flying. Flying was my thing when I first joined up. And in my first year, I became a member of the drill team. And one of the older members on the drill team invited my friend and I to go flying with him. And he ended up losing his life that day. The plane ended up crashing, and we couldn't go flying with him. So I always had that in my head. You know, this is a plane that I was almost on. You know, it was something that kind of stuck with me. You know, and I know this, you know, that you get into this conversation, it becomes all these morbid stories. But, you know, even the following year, my younger cousin perished in a plane crash down in South Carolina. So I kind of diverted my attention from getting my pilot's license after the first accident of the plane I was invited to be on and didn't go. And then my cousin perishing the next year. So these plane crashes are very real, you know, and it's something that I guess hit a little bit closer to home when I was reading this guy's story, because I saw my friend in his casket when I was 12 years old, 13 years old, in an open casket. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's very hard as a young guy.
It is so.
You know, and so when this guy's talking about what he saw, like, I couldn't imagine it. You know, what I saw was a person that was, that was make-upped up, you know. This mm-hmm. guy was seeing terrible stuff.
Yeah.
So I guess that story was really heart-wrenching, and I read it in CBC, and I thought, you know, this. I don't know. I don't think I really sat down. Sometimes you don't sit down and say, I'm going to write a song about this. But I think just the next time that I sat down to write a song, this is what poured out. I had this imagery of the lighthouse in my head. I had kind of this, you know, this darker story that kind of just flowed onto the paper. So it's interesting. I don't know if it's always something that I feel like the story has to be told overtly, or it's kind of just becomes a subconscious thing. And that's kind of what pours out. So
Radio stations kept playing Farewell to Nova Scotia, and I thought to myself, you know, boys, I understand why you're doing that, but if you really wanted this to play a song that captivated the incredible personal loss that happened there, listen to Ron Hines' Atlantic Blue. That says it all. Don't know if how well you know Ron or his material, but well, when you get a chance, just Google that and listen to the lyric, and you'll be blown away.
Man of a Thousand Songs.
Man of a Thousand Songs. Here we go, everybody. Here is the title track.
At the top of the hill, there's a warning light, and it cuts like a sword in the deepest night. For a fleeting glimpse, you're a fool if you go on the blackest part of a cobalt stone. You know it burns so bright when you're close to the sun. If it melts your wings and my words begun, I can't bear to see another wasted life quickly snatched from the earth. Mama, hold me. Seabirds sing. And so many people come to spread their wings. Every soul I find, there were untold more. Must have sunk to the bottom of the ocean floor. Though it close to the sun, if it melts your wings and my words be done, I can't bear to see another wasted life we can snatch from the earth. Mama, hold me tight.
Oh,
top of the hill, there's a warning light, and it cuts like a sword in the deepest night.
That's At the Edge of the World, insightful song here. That is the title track of Mike's brand new album here, and I'm talking with Mike from, I think, his home in Montreal. Hope you're being socially isolated or socially distanced.
Yes, I'm on my place here. Oh, very much so.
Yeah, well, that's great, and we're having a bit of fun here walking our way through this fine album here. The town, which town are we talking about?
Well, When I first wrote it, I guess I kind of wanted it to be anybody's town. But I think when you're pulling some of the personal things out, as you get into the details of the song, as you're getting into the finer sandpaper, it really became my hometown. It became Glace Bay. You know, and I guess that when I got into references about the coal mines, number two is part of the chorus, and number two is the coal mine in Colliery that my grandfather was from that area, and my grandfather he worked in the pit as well. And number two was his district later in life when he became a politician. Hmm. And so I had more of a connection to that district than other places. When I was a little kid, I went to daycare there. When I was in high school, I played rugby and football in the Hub Field, which was perpetually underwater. I don't think it was so close to the ocean. It was just a swamp. But, you know, number two became kind of an iconic part of Glace Bay in my mind. And so I kind of felt like a few little references in that song made it more Glace Bay in my own heart. Even the Sugar Bowl is a little pond that we used to skate on when I was a kid near my grandparents' house. But anybody from Glace Bay would tell you that's not a number two. So if anybody from Cape Breton's listening, you know, that's my artistic license.
Here's the town, everybody.
In the town I was born, there were church bells ringing, there were hymns worth singing from the soles of your shoes, and every rose has its thorn. There were good folks trying, there was a hope worth dying for, down in old number two. Maybe you'll find me someday, where the fog meets the Glacier Bay. Where I always have a familiar place to stay, in the town I was born. On them dusty old coal mines, ain't nothing left but the black flies down in old number two. Seems so pure in my youth, bullfrogs and rubber boots. Oh, and the Sugar Bowl froze down in old number two. Maybe you'll find me someday, where the fog meets the Glacier Bay, where people talk in the most. Town I was born. Thank you.
Are you all ready?
Hi, I'm Chris Andrews, and you're listening to Ron Moore, Sounds Atlantic.
Well, that's the end of part one of this podcast, but don't go away. The second half is just a click away, so we'll carry on with part two.